Hi, Emily.
Hi, Kate.
2 weeks in a row.
What?
Did you, the question you asked me last week, if I missed this, but did you miss me?
Oh, yes.
Such a loaded question.
Yes.
Shut up.
How many different ways can you say one word? Yes, all of the above, all of the emotions.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, Jen and I did a great job of holding on.
I know you did. I listened to some of them while I was.
Did you?
I mean, I was, yeah, I had a lot of time. Well, no, I didn't have a lot of time on my hands. I had a lot of time where I didn't have the use of my hands and therefore listened to and watched many things while taking care of a tiny human.
I appreciate that. I didn't. You know, I didn't know what you did with your time. I do know what you did with your time. We talked a lot during your maternity leave. But I also feel like it's got to be hard to concentrate on anything.
I don't know that I remember anything that happened. I did consume things. I don't remember them.
Well, I feel like,
yeah,
as much as you want to talk about it, your maternity leave does tie in nicely to the topic of this week.
Women's health.
Which is TV Tackles Women's Health, presented by Hollywood Health and Society. Although they do mainly talk about breast cancer on this panel, which is not at all what you just went through. But there is something interesting.
My boobs have been through something.
I mean, and there is something interesting about like what's shown on TV. There's been, I'm going to say thousands. Obviously, that number is not accurate, of pregnancies and births that have happened across television, scripted and unscripted.
I do watch them differently now, just so you know. Like, what was I watching? Oh, no, I'm never going to remember what it was. But it was something recently, and there was a birth scene in it. And I was like, huh, this is different. Like, to watch it now on the other side of having, and P.S., like, I've also talked to quite a few people after I gave birth, and like, there's a thousand ways it happens. Like, obviously, like, maybe even more than a thousand ways. But, like, everyone has, like, the birth story is a fun story to ask. Like, I'm obsessed with it now a little bit of, like, when did you get there? Were you induced? Was it a C-section? Was it this way? Like, did you have drugs? Did you do this? Like, how long did it take? Like, there's now, I'm fascinated with it in a way I didn't care before, so nobody else has. I mean, I did not care.
Yeah.
But once you've then had the experience, there's a little bit of, like, comparison, but also like camaraderie. Mm-hmm. And it is scary. Like, there was a woman, this is going to be a tangent, and it's not somebody I know, so I'm not even going to name them. But through Instagram, I saw a woman who gave birth on the same day as me and had a wildly different experience that was like many, many hours long and ended up with a very long surgery and then ended up back in the hospital and like septic shock and like all of these things. And it was very strange to both be in Austin on the same day, both gave birth to little girls, and like to have these very different experiences. So the representation on TV, I for sure now even watch it in kind of a different filter. And I have a newly shifted, I don't want to say that it's just like new, reflection on like women's health. Like, the things that the body can do and like the things that it's still doing, and talking about like breast cancer, like my doctor told me the other day, like, okay, well, when you're done breastfeeding, like you need to come in for a mammogram. And I was like, huh, well, I mean, sure, but why is there something like,
yeah.
And it's lots of stuff that are happening, I guess, in that gland. And like, we need to check on it when you're done. Like,
well, and okay. They even talk about on this panel that one of the storylines, I think that Grey's Anatomy does, where it's like is something like clogged because a woman gives birth and is breastfeeding and feels and is told or feels that she just has like
a clogged duct.
Yeah, a clogged duct. And so it's kind of written off. And then when it's finally checked, it is breast cancer. And so like that question of,
I mean, it is true.
You just write things off as you're being told it's one thing and that women know their bodies better than anyone.
Yeah.
So you have to advocate for yourself, which is scary. And I think the great thing about these stories on TV is you have, they're scripted. We understand that. But you at least have something to go on.
Right.
Like, you have, no, this is a real thing that can happen to someone.
Right.
So, like, I want to get it checked out.
Yeah. It is fascinating. I don't think I've been through something in a while, maybe like puberty, where, and I'm sure like later in life, it's like menopause, like these stages in life for a woman that like so many things so drastically change and then change back and then like these are all new experiences. Like the whole last, I guess, year now, because she's almost 4 months, she's 4 months old. So pregnancy, birth, and now coming out of it, like how much is going on with your body that like you don't, for, I'm 40. So for 25 years, probably like since like getting my period or something, like my body going through all new things. And I'm like, oh, yes. What is this? And I'm like the number of things I Google, like to just be like, honestly, you just said like clogged duck. Like you're like, oh, what is that? Like, what are the symptoms? Like I have not had mastitis, but like it's something I was terribly afraid of. And I'm like, what are the signs of that? Like what happens with that? Or for the child, like, oh, there's a dot on her face. Is that something I should worry about? Like she got kind of a big head. So she got a flat spot in the back. Head,
but it is,
it is big, but there's a little flat spot. And I'm like, is she going to have a helmet? Like, what are the signs? What do we do? When should she roll? Like the number of things Google, I don't know how people really existed before it. Cause I get an immediate answer of like, I don't go deep. The Google hole should not be one that you go deep down. But if the first like four things all say like, don't worry about it. You're like, okay, great.
I also don't know. It's a funny line of, I don't want you to get all your medical advice.
No, from I do ask other Google, sources.
But it is a nice, immediate, like, big warning sign versus, it's okay, you can watch this for
I mean,
a
I do think that there are a lot of moms on the internet.
Yes.
And they have all decided to talk about things. And I will also, this is sort of a transition, but I heard so much about like mom shaming and like there's only one way to do it and these very strong opinions about like even the idea of like should you breastfeed or not and like that there's shaming and feelings around it. I feel like, at least my experience, is that the tides have turned to be like whatever's right for you. Like that's the number one vibe. It's like you can find what you want on the internet, but like I have experienced less like you have to do it less. You have to do it one way, and more the new thing is like, oh, that was wrong. We shouldn't have done that. Like here is one way to do it. Whatever way you decide is correct. Like you know your body. Like don't listen to the masses.
Do you think it could flip too far that way where it's like, no, there are some wrong ways you could do this. There's so many right ways, but there are some wrong ways.
Probably. I mean, that's a big hole because like I'm thinking about like breastfeeding specifically and the choice to do it or not, and then whether you can do it and who your child is and everything else is, I think that it got really strong that like you must breastfeed and if you're not, you're not giving your child like all of these nutrients and like that shouldn't be because truly some women can't. Like,
someone can't. Also, children are adopted.
Yeah.
Also, there's just so many
different
reasons
things.
That
like, I mean, I will share, talk about like healthcare and like everything else. Like my child had to go to the NICU for the first week and like, I couldn't feed her like the whole time. Like they were like, she is too small. She needs to gain weight. We would like to give her the bottle. And I'm like, yes, please get calories in the
whatever
child.
But the
like,
child needs,
she needs
if
to
the
grow.
Doctor is telling you, we just need to get food in the child. Yeah. You're like,
and
then,
for those that don't know, like, women's breast milk mostly doesn't come in for a few days. And like, I didn't even know if mine would. And so like, that would have been 3 or 4 days of not giving her enough calories to grow, to get out of the NICU. So it wasn't really, I did not see it as a choice. Like,
yeah.
And then we had to start the process of it. And now she does both.
And she's perfect.
And she's perfect. But people don't always, it's not always a choice. And then it is some people may just have the choice of like, this is not fun. She doesn't like it. I don't like it. We're not doing it.
Yes.
Like, this hurts. Like, it is a very fraught, layered choice and sometimes not choice to do. And so, like, I do think that that particular scenario is really good, that it is, like, whatever works for you. Now, I'm not going to go down this hole, but, like, vaccines, for example, might have a stronger opinion of, like, it's not whatever works for you. I believe you should do this. I'm not going to wade into those waters right at this exact moment, but that is health. And I do think that doctors probably deal with the internet of, you know, armchair experts, et cetera, that there's probably some dangerous places where you could get supported and maybe you should be told that.
Well, that's honestly, I feel like I'm going to say the hardest part about the internet. I don't think we can classify the hardest part about the internet, but it's, you can prove anything on the internet. Mm-hmm. You can decide, like, if you are pro or anti-vaccines, you could prove either of those on the internet.
Yeah, like, the opinion, easily. Like, the statements are there to support you in whatever direction you want to go. Yes. I'm sure that there's a whole thing on the internet I know about flat Earth, and we didn't go to the moon, and, like, any number of things.
And now we're wading into all the waters.
Who wants to send us a comment? I know. Back to women's health. My body, my choice. No, I'm not kidding. But
I know. No, you are
it
correct.
Is my body and it is my choice.
There are things that I fully believe, and that is one of them.
Yes. Yes. So women's health.
And I think this panel, even though it does talk the majority about breast cancer, mm-hmm. it does talk a lot about
the representation of breast cancer on TV.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And, but I do think it does a good job of, through that lens, talking about showing so much of women's health on TV. It helps people, one, not feel alone about things that they're going through, and two, be aware of what could be happening to your body mm-hmm. that you don't think. So they talk about a woman that they had on a panel, that Hollywood Health and Society had on a panel, who was a Black woman who got breast cancer, was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it was diagnosed very late in the game because she believed that breast cancer was a white woman's health issue because that's all she ever saw on TV. Mm. So she was like, and was being told, oh, no, that only happens to white women. You don't need to get checked out. Yes, exactly. And so, like, things like that that are detrimental to our society.
And this isn't scripted television, but we recently saw Katie Couric on a panel at South by Southwest with She Media, and it led me down a hole of just reminding myself who Katie Couric was. And she made a huge impact by getting a colonoscopy on television yes. like 25 years ago to get people to get checked for colon cancer. And it was just America's sweetheart, who you spent every morning with on TV, went and did this, and then people asked about it. And it was not the standard. It wasn't the standard for healthcare to cover it. It wasn't, and now it is. Like, mm-hmm. And again, that's not scripted and that's not storyline, but that is the power of the television media to expose things and to elicit questions and then hopefully change. And so I would imagine similarly on even scripted television, if you are at least believing that these are possible things, it might send you down a rabbit hole of like, hey, how often does this happen? Oh, my ear hurts. Maybe it's the, you know.
And I do think things like Grey's Anatomy, I feel like has saved many lives because people have gone to get things checked out or fought for themselves because of things sure. they've seen on Grey's, which is amazing. But then you also have represented on this panel, Superman and Lois, and The Simpsons, mm-hmm. which are two very different shows mm-hmm. than Grey's, and the amount of impact they've had because of breast cancer storylines,
sure. yeah.
which is also really fun because the people watching these shows are not looking for any sort of medical advice,
right.
but just like seeing it and seeing survivors and seeing how things are detected and just making different outcomes the norm.
Sure.
So.
Love it.
Lots of good stuff, lots of good discussions. We'll let them tell you more about it. Here is Beyond the Very Special episode, TV Tackles Women's Health, presented by Hollywood Health and Society, moderated by Kate Landgraf-Folb, the director for Hollywood Health and Society.
Thank you, everybody, and good afternoon. I have no idea what day or time it is, really, but at any rate, glad you're all here. As she said, I'm Kate Folb. I'm director of Hollywood Health and Society, which is a program of the USC Norman Lear Center. We're proud to be sponsoring a number of panels here at ATX this time. And directly after this panel, we're hosting a happy hour. So please join us for that as well. You're excited about that, I can tell.
I saw some really excited faces. So, like, they're like, what?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah. This is the trailer for that show.
Free. Right. Yeah. All right. So today's discussion is broadly around women's health. But more specifically, we're going to focus a lot of our time on a topic that affects all people with breasts, and that is breast cancer and related issues around that, everything from how it affects the family, how it affects the one going through the journey, and also it's not all bad. It doesn't have to all be bad. So first of all, though, let's welcome the panel, Zoanne Clack, executive producer of Grey's Anatomy and Station 19. She also happens to be a co-chair of our board of Hollywood Health and Society, so yay. Christy Korsak, writer for Superman and Lois, among many other shows, one of which... I just have to say that she wrote on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is just like such a... And then we have Matt Selman and Renee Ridgely. Matt is the showrunner and EP of The Simpsons. And Renee is an actor and activist, also on The Simpsons.
And a breast cancer survivor.
And breast cancer survivor.
And I'm married to him.
And they're married, yes. Happily, I'm sure, right?
Sometimes.
25
years, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, right on. Yeah. Almost as long as the show, right?
Shorter than the show.
Yeah.
The show's 30.
I was thinking 30 years. Oh, my gosh.
Well, listen, I don't know them, but he was willing to give her the shirt off his back because she was cold, so I think they're happily married.
There you go. That's right. I witnessed that. Okay, so Zoanne, Grey's Anatomy, what season are you guys in? 19? 20?
Going to 20.
20 years. You've got some longevity here with 35 years, 20 years, so, you know, come on. Come on, Christy.
I don't know if Superman and Lois is going to have any more years, but, you know.
But you have how many so far?
Three.
All right. That's all good. It's all good. 3 years is 35 in today's years, right? Anyway, Grey's has done a ton of breast cancer storylines. Ones that I know just off the top of my head. One that actually featured a young Justina Machado. Where she's a woman who's just given birth and she finds a lump and they tell her it's a clogged milk duct and not to worry about it. And so that's one storyline. I'll let you go into more detail. Another one more recently was Maggie's mom has inflammatory breast cancer, and that was a really interesting storyline. And then there's one that just happened this season, which I'm not as familiar with yet, but maybe some of the people in the audience are, but had to do with Toby. And also, I think, inflammatory breast cancer. And so anyway, tell us about working on the story of or the issue of breast cancer on Grey's Anatomy.
I feel like just as you were saying that, it feels like a lot of the stories are about advocacy and about like women advocating for their own health and women advocating for what they know, you know, they know their bodies and they know what's wrong, and to have other people telling them, you know, what's going on. Because I think you're going to get into this later, but especially for the inflammatory breast cancer story, one of the writers that was on the show at the time knew a lady who watched our show and had some, you know, a rash kind of on her breasts and been told, like, you know, do this, do that, whatever. And she watched the show, went back and said, I really think I needed to be tested for inflammatory breast cancer. That it was that. She caught it early, and she's alive to this day. So, you know, it's about, like, knowing your body and advocating for yourself And with the clogged breast duct, it was a woman who had, you know, been told that it was a clogged breast duct because she had just had a baby. And she, the actual storyline behind the issue was that she had been blaming her baby, and she had been really kind of distant from her baby because if she hadn't thought it was a clogged milk duct, then she might have gotten, you know, treatment sooner. So that was kind of the story behind the issue. So, you know, there's always going to be stories behind issues. And then with Maggie's mom, obviously, it was the relationship between Maggie and her mom. And we got into it through that breast cancer story.
Yeah, and I think actually the newest one about Toby brings up issues for the show's characters who have, you know, for Maggie and for other characters on the show who had, you know, been in previous breast cancer storylines. So it sort of brought all of that back to the front. So Christy, Superman and Lois, woohoo, just this season. And I hope you guys have all watched it because there might be a spoiler or two in here. But the whole season deals with Lois facing breast cancer. So tell us about it.
This season, Lois Lane, she and Clark, the season starts off with them in a very lovely, frisky kind of moment in their lives. They're having lots of sex. Her breasts are swollen. She kind of thinks, like, maybe I'm pregnant. And then it turns out to be inflammatory breast cancer. We definitely felt like we talked to Hollywood Health and Society has been so instrumental in us getting this story right. Most of the writers on the staff have been touched in some way by breast cancer, whether it's a family member or a friend. And we all felt very strongly about doing a story on it this year, but not just, you know, one episode. It's a full season arc, and we wanted to show her, you know, learning about it, having to tell her family how it affects her and her husband, who happens to be Superman, but is very much powerless when it comes to this disease that he can do absolutely nothing about. So it's like, you know, he's fighting bad guys, but at home he is threatened with maybe losing the person he loves the most. But then we also continue through, and I don't know, by the end of the season, which hasn't aired yet, we wanted to show the full journey and show someone not just worried about having cancer and dying with cancer, but living with cancer. And we try our best to show her, actually, you know, she continues to work when she can. As she very much, you know, her family is important, but we really wanted to show the full spectrum. And we felt like it deserved a full season.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting that, you know, Lois, she's a scrappy investigative reporter, right? And she actually uses her, when she's going in for chemo, as a cover to investigate, you know, a guy that she thinks is doing nefarious things. So, you know, who happens to own this cancer treatment hospital. So it was almost like, you made it her superpower, or like a benefit for her in her work, that it wasn't only this thing that's going to make her sick and debilitating. You know, it was something that was augmenting her career, and she continued with her career and her family and all the rest of it. So I thought that was really interesting that you guys did that.
I never thought I would be on a superhero show that I would have gotten to write about this storyline. But it's like, when you are doing that, you do end up having a cancer patient who is on full investigation, but it works for our character. And we, Health Hollywood and Society connected us with this incredible couple, and this woman who was continuing to study for the bar while getting her chemo treatment. And she said she would fall asleep and then she'd wake up and she'd keep studying. And we really were inspired by her and used her as, because we were like, that feels the most Lois Lane. That's the most Lois Lane story we could possibly hear. So we're like, okay, so it's not crazy for her to like grab her little like chemo bag or her treatment and kind of go stalking around the facility. So it was like, on this show that's so heightened, it was nice to have a reality-based person who we could kind of, you know, graft our story to. But it's been researching and going through everything. Like Zoanne said, I am constantly, when we've been writing stories, you can ask any of the women on the staff, we were all giving ourselves like self-exams while working on the episode. It's like, you just are reminded that you are the one who knows your body best, and doctors, they do their best and try, but you know your lumps, you know your curves, you know what's weird, the skin variations and things. So we're hopeful that like using Lois Lane as a representative on TV, just as someone as a reminder, just, check that body, check those lumps.
Check that body. I can see us. Yeah. Check that body.
Yeah, your lady lumps.
Get it. So that's a nice segue to Renee. And I don't,
because I'm missing lady lumps.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, tell us about that. And
right, yeah. Right. It's interesting listening to these stories because they're about the journey of treatment. And the character that Matt and I brought to The Simpsons was someone who's passed her treatment. And so she's into survivorship. And what does that look like? And for 320,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer every year. And 100,000 of them will have, 200,000 will have mastectomies. And about 100,000 will get implants or have tissue moved to build their breast back. And another half of them, the other half, 100,000, will go flat. And you don't see them because it's really easy to put a breast form in a bra. Or just wear clothes that, have ruffles and lace and things. It's just really easy to camouflage that. But I'm part of a community, and I did have implants originally, and I had to remove them for health reasons. And I'm part of a community that is really just kind of proud of my body and all it went through. And it looks very different than it used to. And I don't feel the need to hide it. I also agree with anybody who wants to have a silhouette that looks similar to what it used to look like. So that's part, the story that we have, that Wendy Sage has been able to tell, and her friends now on the show, is that bodies look different after cancer treatment and you can still rock it.
Yeah. So Matt, who pitched that character? For the only man on this panel, there was going to be another dude, I promise you. And he had a show that they had a man on the show that had breast cancer. And unfortunately, he got COVID and couldn't come. But anyway, so as the only man, but also, tell us more about this character. Did Renee pitch this character to you? Did you come up with...
It was well pitched. A lot of marriage walks about this character. One of the, I don't take up too much time, but like one of the great things about The Simpsons is that it holds up like kind of a mirror, a Springfield mirror to America and to society. And we try to use animation to be as specific and observant as we can in so many ways. And one way that we really never had, certainly, was in terms of like people with, who'd lived through terrible diseases and specifically breast cancer. And Renee just wrote the word uniboob on a card and put it on the board and was just like, uniboob, uniboob, uniboob. And, we found a great story about body acceptance. And we put this Dr. Sage character on the show. And it just was like a really, I think it is in the spirit of The Simpsons to reflect America and society. But it's also a little bit shows maybe how our show has evolved a little bit in that we're doing things that are, that might make some people uncomfortable or sad or whatever, but are super real. But she gets all the credit. I mean, I deserve no credit.
And uniboob is a term of endearment, by the way. Like unis, they call themselves unis, and we're flatties. And that's just saying it's not all bad. Like in survivorship, like it's really nice to be in community and to... just have quirky little terms that you call yourself instead of hiding it and going like, yeah, I'm a uni, a rock and one boob. So, so we can say uni boob here.
Well, and I think that goes back to the advocacy thing and stick up for yourself and for your body and, not to be ashamed and to be empowered. I think you were going to say something, Christy.
I was, to the uni boob of it all. I love this. This is a safe place for uni boob. Also on the show this year, I got to write just a conversation between Lois and Lana talking about, she's nervous about her upcoming mastectomy. They definitely, uni boob comes up, but also in the way of, it's two women talking about when they were kids and first got boobs. And in the story, I have some of my own life and my mom's life who only had one boob for the first year of her life. And I think it's so interesting that, like, we as women, I don't see those conversations on TV. And, like, I've had so many people write me being like, I only had one boob. I only had one boob. So it's just interesting to think that, like, our bodies start off in different shapes. And even in the middle, we're all got different things, but we just don't really talk about it. I feel like there's only one silhouette that gets the most attention. Just talking about women's health on TV, period. It's like just talking about periods. talking about any of these things don't really get a place. And, you know, even in our real world of trying to make sure we don't talk about menstruation, which is a shame because this is the cradle of civilization. You know, like we should be like, you know, instead of hiding like our tampons and things when we go to the, like in the office, go to the bathroom, we should be like, I'm menstruating, and everyone should applaud. You know, like it's like Oprah. Everyone's excited for you. Just anyway, tangent. Sorry.
I could go on this tangent because I remember a comedian talking about how, you know, she's having a meeting with somebody, very important meeting, and she's thinking in her head, I'm menstruating right now. What if I just said that? You know, but it's true. And then we also worked with a film in India, which was called Padman. And it was about a guy who invented a device to create pads for people in rural India that couldn't access pads. And they did a whole thing about show your pads. And it was a whole Instagram. Anyway, we get off on a tangent. Zoanne, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to add that menopause is one of the other things.
Yes.
We're doing more and more of, but need more and more of.
Yes, because I feel like it's like hidden what women are going through for some reason. And it's like, I don't know, the more we talk about it, the more other women can feel like they're not alone and isolated. And like, yeah, so I'm... Well, yeah.
And menopause is thrust upon so many breast cancer patients.
Right, yes.
It's sometimes in their 20s.
Yes.
And that can be far more traumatic than almost all of their treatment for someone in their, you know, kind of prime of their life to be thrust into hot flashes and dry vaginas and loss of libido. And those are very, you know, quality of life decreasing elements for those women. So menopause at all ages is kind of pushed away. And I sometimes see that in the breast cancer community. They kind of like, oh, it's all about the hair and the boobs. It's like, oh no, like, you know, it's about the hormones going on and hormone suppression, stuff like that. So those are really important, I think, storylines that if anybody here is writing and thinking about putting those into storylines, those are, you know, great topics. It's certainly a disease that young women have a hard time with.
Has Marge gone through menopause?
Well, they don't really get older.
I think this is a storyline that needs to be explored.
So
that would be great.
Good. We have a lot more episodes to do. So
I love nothing, seeing him uncomfortable.
Nothing is off the table.
A Halloween horror, perhaps. You guys. They get old. No.
I mean, I believe she's had a 1-year-old for 35 years.
Well, that's true. That is true. But maybe Matt she's
always,
short.
Matt and I always joke that we want to see Manopause the musical. Because there's so much man stuff that happens.
Well, let's not make it about us.
Come on, it's not about man. I think it would be.
Okay. Well, so all of them, the storylines we've talked about, and other, you know, tangential ancillary issues around breast cancer and women's health, you know, it's not just, I mean, and this is why I wanted to title this session Beyond the Very Special Episode, because it's not just about Marge has breast cancer and by the end we're going to have resolved it all or whatever. It's the family has breast cancer, you know, that what's going on with the caregivers, what's going on with, you know, Superman, with Clark, and having to deal with her kids. It's also about, you know, there are often these depictions of women with an illness being courageous, you know, and they're always, you know, positive. And yes, that's part of it, but there's also times to be vulnerable and sad and scared and all of the rest of it. And I think all of these shows have kind of explored a lot of those additional issues. Clark goes to a support group because he's Superman and he can't save his wife, you know? So what made you decide to go dive in deeper and to get to some of these issues that weren't specifically about her disease?
I think our showrunners, one of them, his mother-in-law had breast cancer, and it really affected his entire family. And as we were discussing this storyline, all the stories that were coming up and how, you know, the different versions of it we had already seen on TV and what we wanted to see and the conversations we wanted to have, it just slowly became... cancer became one of our main villains for the season. And it was like, how does this permeate through the kids? How do parents, you know, like the things that they tell the kids versus what they hide from the kids because they don't want to scare them. And how, you know, so it's like, it was a great story engine in so many ways, but it was conversations we wanted to have. Uncomfortable conversations that we all wanted to have, juxtaposed with superhero fights and like, you know, the kind of the big world that comes with it being Superman. But at the end of the day, why I love writing for this show is because it's just a family drama, and it's about a husband and wife who are trying to balance their careers, which happens to be superhero stuff, and their kids and real life and things they can't control. And so having those conversations, it really was it was important to us. And it was, the more we talked to survivors, the more everyone in the room had different stories. Again, about whether it's their family or their own experiences or different scares. You know, like I definitely had a lump that I went to a doctor. You know, it's like you have your own journey and your own fears, and all that stuff comes into play in these conversations. But the intimacy conversation we felt was really important between Clark and Lois, and what it feels when your body... the body you've lived with is about to change, and our ideals of femininity and what it means, like, oh, losing my breast, does that mean I'm going to be less of a woman? We just, I don't know, in talking in the room, we just wanted to have those conversations on TV just because other people are probably having them too if we're thinking about them. And just how that affects your marriage. If you as a woman no longer are feeling sexy and beautiful and like, you know, the menopause, you know, you might have menopause. A lot of women have to, you know, freeze their eggs. Young women who aren't even thinking about kids are being told that they probably won't be able to have them later or like whatever. And it opened up a lot of story and conversations we wanted to have. And they were deep and we were definitely very aware. We're like, we don't want to be like the cry every episode, sad season. But which is why it was important for us to show the hopeful side and for, you know, to show Lois living with cancer and to show her having a full life and being hopeful for her kids and her family, but also vulnerable at times.
Yeah, it was great. And also, I mean, she planned for her demise. I mean, she did some planning just in case. And, you know, it freaked her kids out and freaked Clark out. But, you know, she's being realistic about it. And I think that's also something that if you're around tomorrow, we're doing a panel on end of life. But it has to do with, you know, you got to be real about these things and think about what if this happens? What do I want? You know, how do I want to deal with that? And what do I want for my family and involving them in that conversation as well? We did a panel on women's health many years ago now in New York at the Writers Guild East. And we talked about, we had a breast cancer survivor come and tell her story. And she was an African-American woman. And she stood up and said, I thought breast cancer was a white woman's disease. Because everybody on TV, even in the news, everywhere, it was always a white woman that was facing breast cancer. And she was African-American. And she said, I was diagnosed like stage four because I didn't think I need to go get checked. Anyway, thank goodness she's alive and she survived. But Gray's, Maggie's mom, African-American woman, which I think is a very novel portrayal for this, even though, you know, black women get breast cancer all the time too. And especially the other piece of it is a younger woman, you know, that young women face the threat of breast cancer more than we think. And it's important to be aware of that. But I'd love you to talk more about Maggie's story and also Maggie being, you know, the daughter of this woman with breast cancer, and she's a doctor herself, and she's kind of can't do anything about it, and she's very frantic, and so how it affected her mental health as well, and her sort of feeling around all of that.
Yeah, and if you know the character of Maggie, she's very like, I have to do everything. I'm a genius, and... She's literally a genius. And, you know, with the breast cancer story, she was very emotional that her mother really didn't want to do everything. And, you know, it came to a point when they realized that there wasn't a lot that could be done for the stage that she was at because of the fact that, you know, she was told she had a rash and she had actually come to the physician and just said, yeah, can you just take a look at this? And then by the time she was diagnosed, it was a little late for her. But Maggie, you know, kind of went overboard and tried to get her in clinical trials and tried to tell her about this and that and all of the other things and really, really worked hard over multiple episodes to get her to do all of these extreme things. And finally, her mom had to say, please stop, you know, and it pretty much devastated Maggie, and she had to, like, step back and not be Superman let her mom live her life on her terms. And so they had a beautiful, like, goodbye, and once Maggie was able to deal with that, then she had to, you know, be there with her, be there for her. So that was kind of the thing. But what you were just talking about made me think about the other panel that we did that was during COVID, so it was Zoom. But the other lady, was this the same lady who had the stage four? She was a black woman who had been, and she was a nurse, who had been told over and over, you don't need testing, you don't need a mammogram, you're not old enough, blah, blah, this is not going to happen. And then when she was finally diagnosed and she finally pushed and advocated for herself, she was diagnosed with stage four cancer. And that, she was, like, amazing, this woman. And I think they've changed the age of mammograms just recently.
Yeah, to
40.
But go sooner. Yeah, it should be younger.
And it happens a lot younger than a lot of black women also. So, you know, I hope that, you know, our stories have had something to do with just putting it out there and letting people know, along with also obviously the advocacy of the people. But we like to bring these things to light, like your, you know, just the models that we have these stories based on, and just really publicizing them and letting people know that this is happening and these are out there. But I feel like the story about the clogged milk duct also kind of was in that vein because she was very young, so she was like, no, this must be what it is. And so to just, you know, have more stories about you can get it when you're young, you can get it when you're black, you can get it, you know, it's just like letting marginalized communities see themselves on television is always, always a plus. And, you know, Grey's Anatomy is kind of known for kind of bringing that to the fore as far as just having a cast of color and not really making a big deal about it. It's just the way life is and the way that Shonda saw life when she created the show. So, and just putting marginalized communities in those predicaments and having those things just really, you know, you can't be what you don't see, kind of thing.
Has Station 19 done a breast cancer storyline? Because if they haven't...
Oh, we were thinking about it.
Okay.
We were. Well, we've.
You know who to call, right?
Who?
HHS.
I always. She has like a video of me talking about how I don't even understand how they can possibly do any other shows because Grace calls them like every other week. I'm sorry, every week.
Yeah, pretty much every week.
Many times a week.
We're scrappy, you know. Well, think about it for Station 19. Just saying.
We have thought about it.
I want to get into what you just alluded to in terms of impact and how these stories really affect audiences, or do they? And I want to ask you guys, with The Simpsons, did you get fan letters? Did you get people that, you know, reached out and said, I love Uniboob, or thank you for, you know, I felt seen, or, and even beyond that character, other issues that you've dealt with on the show, do you get audience response? Do you get people writing letters saying, thank you, you saved my life?
You talk, honey.
Oh, what a husband.
I can go on about this topic because it's been very impactful, but Matt has a Twitter presence and...
Decreasing.
Thankfully. I spent a lot of time on that. And the day after the episode aired where the Sage, Wendy Sage character was on there, he got a message from a woman who typed that. She was writing him from her hospital room, and she had just had a mastectomy, and she was watching the television and saw the episode with Sage and saw the mastectomy and saw herself represented and said, I'm crying and I know I can do this. And, you know, I don't think you can get a lot of those messages.
We do get a lot of, you know, Homer's my favorite.
But like someone, you know, I got a message from someone who said, my 12-year-old daughter was in the living room and started screaming, Mommy, Mommy, come in here. There's someone else missing a boob on TV. And, you know, that's the kind of impact it has when people see this represented. And you have to be, you know, you have to be looking for it, kind of. You don't have to go like, something's odd. Oh, right, there's a breast missing. In my own advocacy, this... You know, I kind of make these T-shirts and give them to my friends, my flatties, my uni friends. And it's because we really have been empowered by seeing ourselves represented and kind of take this activism to the street during Breast Cancer Awareness Month and let other women know that it's okay to look different after cancer treatment. There's a lot of women struggling with their bodies. There's a lot of women struggling with, you know, certain types of reconstruction with implants are not always comfortable, and it's a never-ending maintenance situation. So sometimes we give power to those women who are considering removing their implants, which would mean going breastless or having one breast, and we say to them, it's okay to look like this. It is okay to have treated yourself, to have lost a part of your body that's sacred, that is like, yes, it's femininity, but it is motherhood. That's what breasts are for. And to say, it's okay to take that off to save your life and to be here a little bit longer. So.
Well, like, Renee also, did we say this already? She crafted the look of the character on the show. So, like, she put in, like, details that I think people who know people with cancer or been through breast cancer would never have expected to see in a cartoon. You know, like, the port scar, right, which is where the infusion goes in.
Right.
Doctor wife. And she's not a doctor. You know, like, the curly hair from when you've had chemo and your hair grows back. Like, Renee, like, put in those details. And, you know, our show is good for that, but usually we would put like details in for like a movie parody or something more pop cultural or something very silly or just like a something from TV or food, but to use it for like a different type of reality was really fun and, you know, meaningful for us.
Yeah, I like to tell people that the animation kept coming back, you know. A lot of notes. A lot of notes for me, because her flat side, like I said, we need to see her in three quarters. You can tell big boob, no boob. And the no boob side kept coming back kind of like convex. And I was like, no, it has to be concave. When they take your breast tissue out, sometimes you're a little concave. And I know a lot of people haven't seen that, but when she landed, there people were on like, did you see she's kind of concave? That's great. That's how it looks. You know, it's, and so, you know, like what you do at Hollywood Health and Society, you make things authentic. You bring in people who know that you had to be flat to know to do that. Or a breast surgeon, like we have a plastic surgeon in the audience, Dr. Potter, who's amazing. You know, that's the kind of person you have to have experienced, or the surgeon who does it knows what that looks like. So.
Yeah, great. That's fantastic. So I have some data on Superman and Lois and Grey's Anatomy's breast cancer storylines, but I wonder if you have an anecdote also that you want to share, or maybe it's too soon since this is this season. Have you guys gotten letters? Have you seen anything on social media saying thank you, thank you?
Just, yeah, I've gotten a lot of Twitter, which I'm slowly making my way off of, but definitely a lot of people are, and a lot of phone calls from, like I said, everyone in the room has had someone who's had breast cancer, and a really good family friend of ours had a mastectomy, double mastectomy in November. And her daughter is a huge Superman and Lois fan, so they watch every week. And every week I get a message, and it's just like, you know, she's emotional, but she's also, it's hopeful. But her daughter is like, Mom, like Lois is like you, which is very, very sweet. And it really makes it worth it. Like I consulted with her a lot on the to write the show. In addition with you guys. So, I mean, definitely messages like that. Also, you know, I'll say the other side is definitely get mixed into the tons of good ones. There are a few who are like, this isn't my experience. And it's because everyone's experience is so different. And I wish we could show that. you know, we really did try our best to show the journey to the best of our ability in 13 episodes. It's mostly very positive and people being grateful, and then, you know, a couple that are just like,
you got to have a few of those in the mix too.
Did you get pushback from the network when you said we want to give Lois breast cancer?
I think it was, you know, Superman represents hope, and we were like, we know. So that was the first conversation, and then we were clear, we'll make sure it's hopeful cancer. did you guys?
No, we just did it.
Yeah. Do you even get notes anymore?
Yeah.
I just, you know, ask, what is it with the expression? Get slap on the wrist later is better.
Yeah. Do it and ask for forgiveness later.
Go ahead, end the show. We've had a good run.
I was going to say, I don't think they're going to argue with you much at this point. And what about you, Zoanne? I mean, you mentioned the one, impact or the email from the friend who said, you know, this storyline of Maggie's mom inspired me to go get a double check. And sure enough, you know, and I think when you told me that story first, you said that the subject line in the email was Grey's Anatomy saves a life, which is gives me cold chills every time. But anyway, other anecdotes or anything on any of these storylines or anything else on women's health?
Well, you had one for the clogged breast duct, right? That I had never even heard.
Oh, well, okay, so I'll tell you. So the Justina Machado episode, which I think was season 3 or something, where she's just given birth, she has a clogged milk, or she thinks she has a clogged milk duct. They keep telling her that's what it is, and then they find out that she does have a lump and the whole storyline. I read an article about a woman in Israel. So Grey's Anatomy is shown pretty much in every country around the world. It's translated in over 60 languages. We've seen people in the slums of Delhi crowded around a little TV watching Grey's Anatomy. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
It follows me around the world.
It does, yes. And anyway, there was this woman in Israel who had just had a baby, thought she had a clogged milk, you know, the whole similar story, wasn't getting listened to by her doctors, and saw that episode, and same thing, went back. They found it, they caught her, you know, they caught it, saved her life, and they did a whole story in like Cosmopolitan magazine or something about she claims her life was saved by Grey's Anatomy.
We get a lot of those claims. Not just about women's health.
I was going to say, that's what I mean. What else? I mean,
there's been a lot through the years, and you know, we very much understand our responsibility on the show and the amount of impact, and we play to it. Like we also don't get notes. So.
Awesome. It's pretty so sweet, right?
So I guess it's like the 15-year mark, approximately. That's when you'll stop getting notes, Christy, okay?
Earlier, we had Shonda.
Well, you had Shonda.
She's a force. But yeah, like, we go into, like, social justice things and just, like, pretty much just social issues in general as well as health issues and you know, we've been more and more tackling, like, race issues, like, really just head-on, like, going into those things. And COVID actually helped a lot with that. COVID helps.
Got the COVID bump.
Yeah, we were able to talk about a lot of the discrepancies in healthcare and just, you know, in marginalized communities and all that through the help of COVID. And then of course, George Floyd and all of that. And just really pull that into the show. And since then, like, really push a lot of issues. Oh, women's health, abortion.
Yeah.
Had a lot of abortion on Grey's Anatomy this past season.
Yeah,
and just what Roe v. Wade, the impact that it could potentially have. And we had to do, God, immense amounts of research because it hadn't really happened as far as, like, what was going to be the impact. So we had to, you know, not do the doomsday scenario, but also say, what if, and to kind of go there. So we did a lot of that this past season, too.
Yeah, okay. So I want to
without the network here.
Yeah, it's the same strategy, right? Do it and then apologize later if you have to.
I have a question. Do you guys feel like you have a mission statement to give viewers the tools to stand up to, like, doctors, often male, older doctors who are dismissive of these claims? I mean, I feel like that is an exciting thing that I bet you guys are doing.
We are doing it. It's not, I wouldn't say it was our mission, but, like, our mission is just to, A, advocate for yourself, B, to kind of know what's out there and the different kinds of things that could happen, and just to have a knowledge base. Like, so, I'm a physician, like an emergency medicine physician, and
oh yeah, there's that.
And like my whole validity to not being out there and saving lives, you know, in person as a doctor, and just working in TV, which seems fluffy until you think about entertainment education and how much information you can get to the world, like literally every week in their homes, in their living rooms with these people that they love. And it just has basically validated my experience and my whole kind of mission statement of being on Grey's and just being able to kind of do all of that and forward those messages and those missions.
I remember you once told me that, because didn't you work in the ER? So she's an ER physician because, you know. And
that's what you do.
That's what you do before you become a showrunner on, you know, whatever. Anyway, but you said, like, on a busy day, maybe you reached 50 people with patients and family or whatever. And, you know, on one episode of Grey's Anatomy, she reaches, you know, 10 million people. And that's just in the U.S. And then when you think about globally. So, yeah. I think you're doing okay. And thank you for your service. So I just wanted to give... Yes. I want to leave a couple minutes for questions, but I just wanted to give you some data that we gratefully, our partners at Ogilvy, who are supporting our work around breast cancer on TV just did a little research on both on Superman and Lois and the most recent Grey's Anatomy breast cancer episode. And so that breast cancer episode aired in April, and it had to do with, I think it was inflammatory breast cancer also, but at any rate, during April, here's a word for you guys, nipple discharge was more associated with breast cancer in online searches. So with Toby's primary symptoms on the episode included nipple discharge, an increase in Google searches suggests people are now considering this a cancer symptom instead of exclusively associating it with pregnancy. And I wish you could see my little graphs I have here, but Google search for Superman and Lois, Google searches for breast cancer in young women in March of 2023 jumped by 2.5 times that of compared to previous month or March of 2022. So, you know, and 336,000 online mentions regarding breast cancer, with 35,000 driven by Superman and Lois. So it was, they were looking online for connections of Superman and Lois and breast cancer. And again, my little graphs show big spikes when the episodes air and searches for breast cancer, breast young women in breast cancer, nipple discharge, whatever. So people are doing that. I mean, they're watching and they're immediately, you know, taking action. So it's very exciting to know that. And, you know, our partner organization at the Lear Center, the Media Impact Project, does this kind of research as well and looks at even more in depth that the impact that TV storylines can have on audiences by surveying audiences before they've seen an episode about a topic and then again after, and looking at the knowledge gains, the attitude shifts, and even behavioral intentions, like, yes, I'm going to go get a mammogram or, you know, whatever it is. So we're always really excited about this kind of data. Another one here is Google shows a peak index of search query breast cancer support groups immediately after Clark went to the support group in Superman and Lois. So, I mean, that gives me cold chills. You know, it's just really interesting. So anyway, so yes, these shows do a lot more than entertain. Entertainment first, always. But they do a lot more than that. They reach their audiences with vital information, with healthy, positive modeling, with or inspiration, you know, and also acceptance that, you know, it's okay to fall apart. It's okay to have a body that doesn't look the way, you know, the majority of the world wants your body to look, and all of those things. And you guys are, so I applaud all of you for all the great work you're doing. And we've got a few minutes left. So if there are questions from the audience, yeah, go ahead. I don't know if we have mics, so just stand up and shout. Or just shout from your seat, whatever you want.
I was wondering about, I mean, you guys are dealing with really heavy topics, right? So it's actually kind of a two-part question. It's one, how do you kind of balance that line between being entertaining and being pontificating, I guess, right? Or, and also, is it, you said you were asking for forgiveness later, like, the abortion topic is a pretty hot potato, right? And you're taking it on, but... is there too hot of a potato? Like, are we not going to go somewhere because it's just too much that the execs are going to say no? Do you...
Yeah, it depends on who you're talking about. If you're talking about these guys, I doubt there's a hot potato. If you're talking about executives, that's a whole other thing, but I'll let you guys answer.
Okay, the first one is you always start in character. So, you know, where's your character going? What is their journey? What is how is this topic going to influence their next decision or where we want to take them? And if it, like for Grey's Anatomy, obviously, you know, it's a health show. So, medical show. Not a health show, but a medical show. So we're always trying to figure out what our characters are going to be tackling. And if it's a hot button issue, and it gets them there, you know, if it's just a lesser issue, like there's not really a lesser issue in health because it's going to affect somebody somewhere. But, you know, if it's a hot topic issue, yeah. If it's a hot button issue, then so much the better. Like we will just kind of go for it because we do kind of have carte blanche after 20 seasons. But is there something that we wouldn't? I mean, you know, there are some things with the abortion storyline that we didn't go as far as we would have liked to, because we still do want to reach those middle people, you know, the people who are like, we're never going to reach the people who are not, we're not going to reach. But there's those middle people who are just like, I don't know, maybe, you know, and we want to still be able to get to those people. So we don't want to go like crazy leftist far, you know, just like, but, you know, progressive and just be, and just basically talk about the facts of the situation and not try to put, we put the character's emotion into it, but not like make it emotional and this is where we think it's going to go and this is, we got to fire it up. You know, it's just like, this has happened. This is what we're portraying on television and dramatizing it. So that's why I was saying like it was kind of hard at the beginning of it because it had just happened and we really didn't, we had a lot of like thoughts, you know, we talked to a lot of people from Hollywood Health and Society and just out, a lot of doctors, a lot of OB-GYNs who were saying this is where I think it could go and this is the worst case scenario. And do we go with the worst case scenario or do we pull back a little bit and just say, okay, well, we know that this particular thing has happened. Like, for instance, there was the one, was it a 12-year-old who had had an abortion because of rape?
In Indiana, or she had to go to Indiana to have the abortion.
But then the doctor got charged.
Yes. Yeah.
But at the time that had happened, we were like, we want to do that story. But at the time it happened, we didn't know what was going to happen with the doctor. And so we just never really went there with that, and we went a different direction. We're still telling the story, but just kind of not that involved. So there was some stuff that we kind of pulled back on.
I have a topic that I think is very deep and very pushes the buttons. And I don't think it would be executives that would say no. I think it would be, the first one is the direct link, I mean, between alcohol and breast cancer. And I see so many fundraisers that are literally called boobies and beer and stuff like that. So great, you want to raise funds that way. That's called pink washing. You need to put a sign up and says, hey, the new study show more than 2 drinks a day is linked to breast cancer. And an even bigger one that I would love to see do, it will not happen on The Simpsons, I know, because this is dark.
Duff equals death.
Is a story where a woman dies from the implants that are put in her breast. Okay? Women don't even want to talk about that because this has been so normalized to put implants into your body. And there are some women who won't get ill, but there are a lot who get sick and there are some that die. And that's a story I'd love to see somewhere.
Well, I'm sorry, but I mean, you brought that up. I got really mad at Susan Cohen after my mother died, that they seriously, their sponsor was Yosoy Bars, and they're handing Yosoy Bars out to the people walking in the marathon. So I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right, so you're talking about estrogen-driven cancer and then soy. And
you're supposed to be the expert, and you're not, so yeah.
At one of the breast
KFC buckets, right?
One of the breast cancer walks, the sponsored beverage, although not carcinogenic, was that they were handing to the women was that liquid death. We're just like bad optics sponsor.
Yeah, another one at a Cohen walk, wristbands that said save the tatas, giving out to stage 4 breast cancer patients, some of who don't have breasts. Like, but it, you know, people think it's funny and the pink color sells. So those are some.
So the answer, part of this is know your audience. In anything you do, right? other questions, because I know we got to wrap up soon. Okay.
So I just want to say, as someone, as a sort of press registrar for this flag, I cannot tell you how much it means to me to see that like representation. It's just, I just never thought it was going to happen. I was getting emotional when I talked about this. But I'm also at the stage 4, as a metastatic breast cancer, stage 4. And so I'm wondering if there's any room in any
writing any story to show someone who has stage four that it's living and thriving and living for a long time, and not just like, oh, you have stage four, oh, next thing you're in hospice, and oh, you know, you're just in fever. Because my treatment, I lose my hair, I just got back from Costa Rica, running around, and you know, I would love to see that kind of stage four, and some more hashtag.
And the positive aspect of that is like the treatment is allowing women to live with it as a chronic illness and to not have to show it on death's bed, right? But to show like, what does that look like? And it's challenging, right? It's not a walk in the park, but it, you know, that is a story that needs to be told.
So it's like, you know, when I told my kids, you know, they were like, oh, well, you know, we have 2 years, you know, like it's like, that's what people think. And people are like, oh, you have stage four. That's weird. You don't look like it. I'm like, well, what does it look like? Right.
Well, you know, the woman that you mentioned that was on our Zoom panel discussion, she was stage four, and she's got a farm, and she works, and she's, you know, living her life and has her hair, and, you know, and she's stage four. So,
if we did get a season four, I think our goal was to show, Lois has, she's stage three, but to show her living and thriving. With cancer, you know, like you said, as more of a disease and not as a death sentence. So,
yeah, back there.
A lot of the barriers you talked about today as far as treatment are like not recognizing symptoms soon enough to go see your healthcare professionals. I worked in the hospital system for 12 years as a financial counselor, and a lot of what I saw was by the time someone was brave enough or had the support to go seek some kind of appointment or diagnosis, they couldn't afford the treatment. Mm-hmm. So what kind of conversations were happening in the writer's room about exposing that part of our healthcare system, or maybe using that to influence voters?
That's a hard one, because our hospital cannot be seen as bad. And our doctors would just advocate for that patient and pay for their treatment, you know, which is not
heroes.
A reality of healthcare.
Couldn't there be like a bad one next door?
Yeah.
I think Amsterdam.
Yeah, I was going to say New Amsterdam did a lot of that.
Well, there are doctors who do that, who pay for their patient. I mean, I'm here visiting one of the premier surgeons in Austin, Dr. Potter, who, as they're trying to take one of the options away from women after breast cancer called deep flap. It's the one where you use your body, some fat from another part of your body, move it up. And it's, you know, once it's a rough surgery, but once you're through it, you're through it and you're done. And the CMS, which is getting technical, but basically the government's trying to take that code away so women won't have that option anymore. And this woman is fighting for it. Dr. Potter, you're amazing. And people will come to see her, and she will, if their insurance is denying it, she is doing their surgery. So that's kind of just what you said. That's real life happening. That's
Grey's Anatomy.
And the American healthcare system, yes.
Yeah. We had a lot of conversations about finances in the room for Lois and Clark, because they're journalists. I mean, Clark doesn't get paid. Superman doesn't get paid. They're like really struggling. Some of us were like, how do they even afford the house? But we had conversations about, like, we wanted scenes, and even in some scripts, there were like scenes of them on the phone for hours going through bills, and like, because that was a lot of the conversations we had too with people. And even, like I said, the people in the room have dealt with this too, but like, the hours you spend with the financial people and trying to like pay your bills that are suddenly astronomical, and fighting to get surgeries paid for that you need to live, you know. And so it was just, and they, we had to cut them for time is what happens. And it's so frustrating, because it's like, you need more than a season on a network show. A streamer needs to do it, where they have like, it's not, because our hour is like 42 minutes. Streamer, you get like, it's like an hour plus, so maybe that's what needs. But I do believe, just back to the self-advocacy and everything we're talking about, and I think that's why inflammatory breast cancer is something our shows have tackled more recently, is because it's symptoms that are not just lumps. It's like, be aware of rashes, of discharge, of any number of things. And Because I think women are really great advocates. Like, I don't know, if something's wrong with me, I go to a doctor. But when it comes to my mammogram, I'm definitely a little bit more hesitant. And we've talked about it. It's like a torture device. And it's like they should have absolutely upgraded it by now. And so it's like we need to, like, you know, we need like a challenge, like a yes, ma'am to the mammogram, like thing that we were like, I challenged three of my friends. I just got my mammogram. And we're all like, yes, ma'am to the self-exam. Yeah, mammogram party. Let's do it. But like,
I just think, something. I think if men had to put their private parts in that machine, we would have new innovation already to fix that.
Well, tell me more about this machine. I'm intrigued.
So maybe that can be a new... Anyway, all right. Well, I think we have to wrap up, sadly. I just have to say this because I've been binging Superman and Lois, is that, you know, it's so funny where they'll be talking about whatever and then he'll go, I gotta go. Boom! And he's like gone. And she's like in the middle of a thing and she's like, go ahead, honey. You know, like go save whoever. And it just cracks me up. But then my husband kind of does that too every now and then. Yeah, he doesn't fly, but my husband will kind of walk out in the middle of a conversation too. Anyway, let's thank our panel. Thank you all so much. This was fantastic.
You have been listening to the TV Campfire podcast, hosted by ATX TV co-founders Emily Gibson and Caitlin McFarland, and produced by Jennifer Morgan. This conversation was recorded live at ATX TV Festival Season 12 in Austin, Texas, between June 1st and 4th, 2023. For more information on the festival and becoming an ATX TV member, follow us at ATX Festival or visit atxfestival.com.